The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Once again, here in the hot seat, I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy Thursday evening or Saturday morning or whenever it is that you get a chance to pick up the show and listening to its entirety. We're going to have a fun show today because not a lot of fun stuff's happening. When Rod joins me in a few minutes, the Fed has now come out and said, you know what, we're going to aggressively get after this thing, and we're going to talk with Rod about what's happening, what is the market reacting to this new found aggressive tone that is coming out of some of the Feds around the country. We'll talk to him about that. But before any of that, a couple quick things. Doug Hughes, I know, finished up his Ivy Tech course, retirement planning today, a week ago. And that was great. I think another one will come in the fall. So if you missed it and would like to attend it, look for those announcements through the Center for Lifelong Learning, and you can sign up. Now, myself, I have the Taxes in Retirement, What You Need to Know to Win program. It's about an hour and 40 long. I did several in, did one or two in February, three or four in March, and none in April, I don't think, and then my next one's in May, and that will also be at Ivy Tech. There's no charge to come to that, so if you would like to attend it, I think it's March or May 8th. It is through Ivy Tech Center for Lifelong Learning. You can look it up online. Register and come. I think you'll really enjoy it. You'll get a copy of my book, 2025, The Final Drive, as a complimentary. You'll get a complimentary copy for coming. And, yeah, we'll have a lot of fun, and we'll get to know each other. And then after that, we'll kind of give you some tips and tactics on how to address what I believe is the most expensive thing in retirement, which is taxes. Podcast number 11, I believe it was out last Monday, and it was about folks that own their company stock in their 401k and how to handle it the tax-correct way. And this week, coming up next Monday, you're going to hear a topic on which is really the most sacred of all tax codes, Section 7702 in the IRS code, which is discussion of the tax-free treatment of life insurance. So I have a great, probably one of the longest podcasts. In fact, when I came out of the room, they were like, man, that was long. I said, yeah, I know. First podcast was the longest, has had the most listeners. Podcast number 3 has the next most listeners. But we are knocking on the door of hopefully having over 1,000 downloads already in 2 months, which, as I've talked to people that do podcasts, say that's incredible. So I appreciate everybody's loyalty to Your Money with David Hayes and how the feed has fed right into 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win. So hopefully you're enjoying those. Most of them are short, 7 to 14 minutes. This one was a little bit longer, but I had a lot to say. That's why I told him when I came out of the room. I had a lot to say, so it took a little bit longer than normal. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by my good friend Dirk Bland over at Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online and check out their most recent auction at kennyblandauctions.com. And Lance Like at the Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that does come with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And finally, here we are entering the storm season. So as much as I don't want to have to use my generator, I'm always happy when it comes on. And Unrivaled Electric, they are your full-service electrical contractor. They do specialize in generators and solar arrays, veteran-owned. They want to be your electrician like they are mine. Give them a call. 812-361-3604. Find them on Facebook as well. All right, the S&P 500 is actually up 3.7% in March, the first month this year that we have been positive after negative January and a negative February. But the market is still down, the S&P 4.6%. through the end of March. Now, you might be looking at your statement and wondering why you're down even more. I have a whole segment on that because it's going to be very, very interesting to explain what is going on. April has actually been the best month for the S&P over the last 30 years, so let's cross our fingers that that is the case again, averaging 2.34% total return, which would not overcome the 4.6 that we are down year to date. The month of November is actually the second best performing month over the last three decades. The S&P index has appreciated at least 10% in 19 of the last 30 years, and including 8 of the last 10. You call that recency bias, where we are biased because of the recency of these returns. That's incredible. It's a pretty good, darn good run. Let's talk about the spending. I mentioned this in one of my podcasts. There's a lot of it at the U.S. level. President Biden's 10-year budget proposal released on the 28th of March for the fiscal year 2023 says that we're going to get about $4.64 trillion in tax receipts, but we're going to spend $5.79 trillion in outlays. That's netting a $1.15 trillion deficit. The proposal also anticipates deficits of at least $1.15 trillion for each of the next 10 years, adding up to an additional $14.4 trillion of deficit spending over the next decade. That comes directly from the White House. And as I have made fun of these projections many, many times in the past, they're always too low. It will be higher than that, are guaranteed. And one reason is interest rates are going up. When interest rates go up, right, it's more strain on our coffers because we're paying more to service our debt. President Biden also proposed a minimum tax of 20% on incomes and net worth of folks over $100 million. They said that could impact an estimated 20,000 households. That'll be interesting if that actually happens, how that works. Because I was talking to a private individual that I know owns over $100 million of real estate, but it's not public knowledge. No one knows exactly how much he has. And if you had a bunch of Amazon or if you had owned a publicly traded company, so we'll see if that actually happens. And if it does, then, you know, we'll let you know how it works. This is another scary fact. The Biden budget projections said the Social Security outlays will increase by nearly 80% over the next 10 years. Medicare will rise 118%. And here's the whopper, and I'm going to say this is probably low. Interest costs will rise 213%. A head shaker, for sure. The White House forecasted that our national debt will reach $44.8 trillion as of September 30th, 2032. That's 10 and a half years down the road, up from $30.3 trillion as of today. You know, I know we're fighting inflation right now, and we're trying to get it under control. Well, let's flash back to a really dumb idea. President Nixon, faced with rising inflation, implemented what was to be a 90-day freeze on prices and wages. That's back in August of 1971. I would have been exactly 8 months old. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I would have been a year and 8 months old. So I was walking, probably not talking. Controls that were largely kept in place until April of 1974. The price control strategy did not work. And from 1974 to 81, inflation averaged over 9.3% per year for the 8 years around that time. It's crazy. Population shift. You know, a lot of big cities have shrunk. Well, back in 1950, Detroit was the fifth largest city, Baltimore sixth largest city, and per the 2020 census, Detroit was 27th and Baltimore 29th. A lot of reasons for that. Federal loans, student loans, have been on grace period since March of 2020. The 37 million Americans with direct federal student loans have not been required to make a single loan payment since March of 2020, since what they call the pandemic started. The $1.3 trillion of the $1.6 trillion in total student loans are direct federal student loans. That means they're made directly by the Department of Education. March Madness is over. Kansas was the winner, of course, but hoops underdogs. This is kind of fun to just give you this little stat. St. Peter's, right, the darling of the men's postseason college basketball tournament, played in its home opener of the 2021-2022 regular season back on November 23rd versus Long Island University in front of just 434 fans in its 3,200-seat arena. The Peacocks' final game of the season, that loss to North Carolina, well, they played in front of a sold-out crowd of 20,235 seats. Arena in Philadelphia. What a fun tournament. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's get Rod on the phone. The Fed, have they waited too long to act? Now they're being hard and heavy, and the markets don't like it. So when we come back, we'll get Rod's opinion of that and really what the purpose of this is and the intent to try to slow things down and what you can think about and do to help protect you and not get whipsawed by what's happening in the markets. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. We're actually on hold for Rod. Rod was tied up, so he will be calling in just a few minutes. So let me talk to you about this. I'm looking at my statements. I'm looking at my values, and I'm thinking, what in the heck is going on? The S&P, you just said, was down 4 to 5%, but I'm down more than that. Why is that? Well, folks don't understand why, you know, the accounts look the way they do. Let's back up and talk about when you invest, what do you do? Well, when you invest, you either do one of two things. You're either an owner, where you own something, right? Like a stock, piece of real estate, piece of gold, whatever. You own it. And you get the appreciation, depreciation, whatever it is that comes with owning that asset. Or you can loan your money. Loan it to the bank. Loan it to a municipality. Loan it to a corporation. They typically will pay you some kind of a fixed interest rate, especially with a loan to a corporation. They'll give you a period of time they're going to pay you, and then they'll give you your money back, and that's considered a bond. Well, let's talk about bonds and interest rates. Most bonds are actually original issued at least 20 years or longer. At the same time, as time moves along, they kind of shorten up. So a bond that was issued 15 years ago is now a 5-year bond. And values will move up and down on those bonds, even though the face amount's fixed, even though the interest is fixed and the maturity's fixed, but the values will teeter up and down based on underlying interest rates, like what's happening in the world. So you've heard this before, when rates go up, values come down. We'll give this just a thought for just a second. I own something that's paying me 2%, and it matures in 10 years. And now interest rates on the 10-year treasury jump from 1.5% to 2.5%, and now corporate bonds need to be paying 3.5% to be competitive. Well, I'm sitting here with my bond paying 2.5%. Do you think my bond is worth more or worth less? Well, it's worth less, and a lot less. And sometimes a move of 1% will make my bond value decrease or increase, depending on the way the rates are moving, somewhere between 7 and 12%. So we did have a move in interest rates that have gone from 1.5% up to 2+. And that's where the problem lies. So we see major declines in bond rates or values, and that is why your account may look much worse, even though you're not 100% stock, because your bonds are getting killed. We're going to take a quick break, come back, catch up with Rod. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. We have Hot Rod on the line. And Rod, you and I were talking today in preparation for the show and just what's been going on. You know, we had a pretty good feel for what the Fed planned to do for 2022, and the market was reacting in an okay way. But the market hates when curveballs are thrown its way. And you were discussing with me how one of the most dovish Federal Reserve members finally has flipped their script and have gone from, no, we need to just be at a steady pace here, to a pretty aggressive pace, and not just increasing rates, but unwinding that massive balance sheet that the Fed has. And the market doesn't like it. Too fast is what causes volatility. The Fed has waited a long time to react to this. Now they're going hard and heavy at the problem, and they just don't like it. So it's not just the interest rates that are changing, but when you start selling off these assets that they've been holding and not just letting them run off naturally, it's causing some pretty solid disruptions out there, isn't it?
Yeah, most certainly, because you kind of have that double whammy that you just alluded to of them pulling liquidity out of the marketplace by selling their bonds back into the market. And of course, they're not going to redeploy those dollars that they take in from selling the bonds, in addition to then increasing interest rates, which is going to make things more expensive that you need to use credit to buy. And those are some of your bigger ticket items, automobiles, houses, those types of things. So then those things start to slow down, and then that slows down the rest of the economy, because the big ticket items are the ones that really have the biggest, strongest multiplier or the rippling effect through all of the economy. So then that trickles into other sectors and areas. And as we talked about earlier, you know, part of the problem, not that the Fed shouldn't be fighting the inflation, they most certainly should. They should have started it long before they did, but they didn't. So here we are today. Is the aggressive nature in which they're going to attack it, especially because a lot of the things causing the inflationary pressure are out of the Fed's control and aren't just simply purely normal too many dollars chasing too few of goods. Obviously, it is a supply-demand imbalance, but part of it has to do with the supply logistics logjam that we have in which has not been unwound. Is it a little bit better today than it was at the start of the year or at the end of last year? Sure it is, but it most certainly isn't resolved and all of those things are cleared up. So what I have been talking with Glass about is what the market would fear most would be the Fed getting far more aggressive in their inflation attack than what everybody had anticipated. And so we go from looking at the end of last year, you were expecting 2 rate hikes near the end of 2022. Then that jumped to 5, then 7, now it's at 8. We always knew that the quantitative easing or the bond buying program was going to slowly unwind itself. They were going to eventually stop buying bonds. They were going to eventually let the positions they own just roll off and not reinvest those dollars. And that, yeah, they may begin to sell. Well, now they're talking about selling and selling aggressively. Now you're talking about potentially 50 basis point increases. So in the matter of less than 6 months, the outlook for what the Fed is going to do is dramatically more aggressive at fighting the inflation than what it was just roughly 5 or 6 months ago. That's where the market begins to get a little bit nervous. And especially because history has shown us that bull markets don't tend to die of old age. They get taken out back and shot by the Fed. That's the fear. Is that what we're going to see with the Fed? Once again, I have said many times, I think Fed Chairman Powell is a good, fair Fed chairman. I think he's done a good job. It's not that I don't think he's capable of the job. I think that the job at hand is almost impossible for them to do, at least from the standpoint of constructing soft landings. One of the mistakes I do think they made was should have started sooner. We have been out of emergency economic conditions, not counting the pandemic, long before, and did not do anything about reducing some of the emergency measures that were implemented with the drop in interest rates to basically zero, the purchases of bonds and all that going on. Had they started sooner, they could have been a lot more patient, given the market an opportunity to kind of settle and digest 1 rate moves, 2 rate moves. Instead, the market is going to have to digest a whole bunch of these all within 1 year. And like we keep talking about, it's roughly at least on a minimum 6 to 9 months before you really feel the impact of the move that they make. So if we're going to make this many moves, that pushes us a long ways out, a few years out there before we really feel the full impacts. Man, that's a tough thing to do, is to guess as to where the economy will be 3 to 5 years out when you have events such as Russia-Ukraine that nobody anticipated as of just 9 months ago. While everybody knew it was on the table that Putin coveted Ukraine, I don't think anybody 9 months ago was telling us that, oh, yep, Putin's getting ready to invade Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on. But I think they should have started the tightening or at least unwinding the balance sheet probably last summer. I mean, the economy, like you said, was just screaming along. You know, jobs were being added. Housing was being gobbled up. I mean, and everyone was fearful of stepping in too quick. Let's back up and talk about these interest rates. So now we're seeing mortgage rates that are tickling 5%. We haven't seen that for a long time. People have enjoyed 2s and 3% mortgage rates now for a while. And I've said this before, that has driven prices up, not just material costs, labor costs, but the fact that rates are low, I can borrow more money on the same amount of money that I'm making. So I did some quick math. If you borrowed $500,000 at 3% for 30 years, your total payment's around $2,100 a month or $25,000 a year. At 5% on $500,000, your payment is $32,200 for the year, or basically $7,000 more in payments. So you'd be making, by rates moving from 3 to 5. That will start to slow things down. That will loosen up inventories. That's the first thing that will happen. All of a sudden, not everyone can afford that $650,000 home any longer. It starts to loosen up inventories, and then it gets to the point where it just slows everything down. At that point, you'll see prices of materials start to drop. We've seen this cycle before. You'll see, okay, things have slowed down. Now we need to get them picked back up again. We'll start lowering rates again, and we start the whole cycle over. The problem is we don't know exactly how long those things take to happen, and that's why we continually keep our eye on things. So, Rod, if you were sitting there talking with the everyday person, they're working. Maybe they're in our age bracket, in their 50s. They are looking to the finish line, right? They're looking down the line saying, hey, in the next 10 years, I'd like to be somewhat prepared for retirement. For those people, what should they expect, number one? Because I think if you expect something to happen, even though we don't know when, it certainly helps. And what do you think that some of those people should be considering, if anything, when it comes to their most coveted possession, besides their children, their wives, their parents, their siblings, whatever, their 401k.
Yeah, most certainly. Well, I think the first thing that you have to do, especially in these volatile times, is you have to really sit down and assess, does your risk tolerance match the volatility you're seeing within your portfolio? Or are you going to bed sick to your stomach every night for fear of what the market's going to do the next day? If that's the case, you've taken on too much risk. And you need to begin to dial that down. Now, if you feel like you're doing okay from a risk perspective, then I also think it's important to then evaluate what's the time horizon to retirement. When do I want to turn on income? And then how am I allocated and where am I going to generate that income from in the early years? Because you don't want to count on equity markets rebounding or doing very well and, oh, I'm just going to sell out of equity to do it. You want to begin to set the table for that retirement and start directing some of those assets around. Now, unfortunately, in the 401k, it's far more difficult to do this. But on the fixed income side of things, we like to own fixed income with maturity dates on them. And the reason for that is in this environment, just like you have already talked about, Dave, there are many people that are going to get their statements from the end of March and probably be a little bit surprised, especially in a balanced or a conservative portfolio, how much they're down. And a lot of that's coming from the fixed income side. Not that the equity's not down, but fixed income in many cases, especially some of that intermediate to longer term bonds, is down considerably. Well, the reason we like a maturity date is because when we sit down with our clients, we can look at a bond and evaluate, okay, wait, here's the deal. It's trading at 85. We paid 100 for it, par value. It's down to 85 right now. But here's the date when this thing goes back to par value and we get paid on that full par value back as long as the company is around. So you got to continue to follow and monitor credit quality of the company in that regard. You don't get that same luxury in stocks. There is no set date that we can look at and go, oh, Walmart will be trading at this price on this day. You don't get it with your bond mutual funds. Now, of course, the holdings within the fund have maturity dates on them because they're buying real individual bonds. But that is a constant changing and evolving target as the fund manager in there is buying and selling. Sometimes his buying and selling is based on outside forces, redemptions, or inflows. Sometimes it's based on what he sees and where he sees opportunities out there. So it's not so much that bond funds are bad and shouldn't be used. It's just in this environment, it's a little bit easier to give somebody peace of mind when they see a drop in value on their bond. And you can start pointing to certain dates of, okay, on this date, we're going to get this many dollars back when this bond matures. On this date, same thing along those lines. So it's just a little bit easier of a story to tell. Unfortunately, in most 401ks, you're not going to be able to buy individual bonds inside of there. You're going to have to stick with bond funds. You could potentially attempt to shorten duration. You could potentially go to some sort of a go-anywhere bond fund. Many of them are called strategic. Be cautious. Some strategic will take on more credit risk. So you want to be cautious and not take on too much the low investment grade credit risk, but potentially giving the manager of that fund the freedom and flexibility for him to move around where he sees best opportunities within the bond world to potentially minimize what we're seeing and feeling right now with the rising interest rates decreasing the prices of bonds.
So Rod mentioned that longer maturity bonds are most sensitive to interest rate changes. So think about your bond portfolio as like a lever or a teeter-totter, for us old enough to remember what a teeter-totter actually is. And the closer you are to the middle, closer you are to maturity, the less the ups and downs really feel like any issue. But if you're way out on the ends, when you have minor changes, you really get thrown up and down quickly. And that's the way bond prices work. Interest rates go up, right? I'm going to go down on the other side. So if I'm way out on the other side of the teeter-totter, I'm going way down. If I'm up near the middle of the teeter-totter, I barely even feel the change. That's the way bonds work. If rates go down, right, I go all the way down. Rod's on one end, I'm on the other. I fly up in the air. I'm at the very top, which they're up. And that's what we saw in 2020 and 2021. We saw rates go way down, values way up. And I would tell people, Rod, in meetings, I'm like, don't get too excited about this, because if we're really focused on this, this, and this, we can't, you know, what are we going to do if we sell it up here? So yeah. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, par value on maturity works the same way when your bond is trading at a premium as it does a discount, meaning the closer you get to maturity, that bond that may be trading for 105 is going to slowly work its way back to 100. So, yes. It works in both directions as far as being under par value and over par value. The closer to maturity you get, the closer you're going to come back to that par value.
We just want people, when they open their statements, to say, yeah, I knew the market was down about 4%, but I'm down 8, right? Or I'm down 9. I mean, why is that? Well, it's the bonds. It's the bonds that are causing it, which we've never, for most people, have never had that happen to them. So we're talking about uncharted territories for most people out there, especially when the last 8 of 10 years we've had double-digit returns in the S&P 500 and declining interest rates. So you had both things working in your favor, and for the first time in a long time, we have things working in both ways out of your favor. Rod, great job as always. We'll listen to you on Big Show Friday coming up soon with Glass in the Afternoon. Have a great one. I'll see you back at the ranch.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a wonderful show.
We're going to take a break. We're going to switch gears here. Why is having your beneficiaries up to date so important? Well, let's talk about that, because I don't want you to disinherit your grandchildren and you didn't even know it happened. We're going to flip there, only because I've had some recent situations where beneficiaries, after someone's passed away, have come into focus. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, why is having proper beneficiaries so important? And let me just back up and say, when you put down a beneficiary on something, a life insurance policy, an annuity, an IRA, that's where the money goes when you pass away. You could have your ex-spouse on there. That's where it goes. You could have the Humane Society on there. That's where it goes. It doesn't go through your will. It direct transfer to whoever you wrote down. Now, that's not always the case, however, because 401ks, IRAs, 403bs, pensions, they're all different in how the federal law looks at this stuff. So if I have an IRA and I list my brother as my beneficiary and I pass away, the money's going to my brother. It's not going to my wife. If I have a 403b, in most cases, it's going to go to my brother. But if I have a 401k and it falls under what's called ERISA, then that's not the case. The reason is, under ERISA law, the spouse must sign off if they're not the primary beneficiary. So let's say I was married and I got divorced and I have a 401k plan and I remarry and then I die, which has happened in my professional world before. Not my personal world, thankfully, my professional world. And when this person passed away, his ex-wife was listed as the primary beneficiary. In a 401k, where does that money go? It actually goes to his current spouse. Because under ERISA law, the current spouse would have had to have signed off to say, I am not the primary beneficiary, someone else is. So in that situation, the current spouse got the money. The kids of the first marriage didn't get the money. She got the money. Now, had he listed his wife and two kids as primary beneficiaries, in most cases, the spouse would have to sign off and say, I'm not 100% beneficiary, right? They have to sign off on that. But in an IRA, no one has to sign off. If I want to leave it to, if I left that relationship and I have a new relationship and I die and my ex-spouse is the beneficiary of my IRA, guess who gets the money? My ex-spouse, because it doesn't fall under ERISA. Guess who gets the money? My kids. My current spouse doesn't get it. 403B plans, that would be if you worked at IU, the hospital. Some are ERISA, some are not. School systems, some are ERISA plans, some are not. If it's an ERISA plan, yes. If it's not, no. You've got different rules for different things. Pensions, same thing. Most of the time, you have to have a spouse sign off on a pension. Even if you want to elect a single life option once you retire, the spouse has to sign off. If they don't sign off, you've got to include them in this thing. So you have all this going on. You have married, you have divorced, you have widows, you have children of previous marriages. So it's important to understand ERISA and non-ERISA plans, or most importantly, understand, just update your beneficiaries. Make sure they're correct. Make sure they're where they go to the places you want them to go. And oh, by the way, let's say that you have three kids, right? And they're your primary beneficiaries, and they all have kids. And you love your grandkids more than you love your kids. Let's just admit it out loud now. Well, let's say that I pass away, and now it's my brother. Let's say there's four of us. Say we got a sister, make it more practical in my real world. Three boys and a girl, right? One passes away. The way most IRAs, most retirement plan beneficiaries are written, it says, if one of the beneficiaries predeceased me, then please pay out the proceeds pro rata. What does that mean? Well, it means take my share and divide it amongst my brothers and sisters. Not per stirpes. Per stirpes means per branch, the Latin term that says give it to my kids or the grandkids. So when I say you might be disinheriting your grandkids and not even know it, if something happens to one of your beneficiaries, update your beneficiaries. If you have per stirpes listed, so you have Danny, David, Mark, Jane, David, Carrie, whatever, have all your kids, and you say per stirpes, that means if I die, my share goes to my kids. That's per stirpes. You don't have to change the beneficiaries, although I recommend you do. So in my case, let's say that I passed away and my dad wanted my share to go to my son, Will. He should update his beneficiary form and just put Will on there as primary beneficiary for 25% and then the other 25%. It's so important. Life insurance, annuities, anything that you can put a beneficiary on, I think it's a great idea, and make sure it's going to who you want it to go to. So anytime you have a life event, you know, you have a death, you have a divorce, you have a child born, a grandchild born, it's always good to check those things out. So now I know you're sitting back thinking, you're like, I don't need to just check my beneficiaries, I need to check my wife's too, because if she doesn't have it right and something happens, that money could go somewhere else. I'll share with you a New York Post article that I've carried around since 2005 called The Pension Pickle. And it says, broke widower loses $1 million to in-laws. And this is a non-ERISA plan, just so you know. A Brooklyn man says he was left destitute when his late wife's pension worth nearly $1 million was awarded to his sister-in-law on a technicality. That's what he says, technicality. The Friedmans were happily married for nearly 27 years when Annie, a former city school principal, died suddenly of a massive heart attack in September. Friedman said he never doubted he was entitled to the lump sum payment of nearly $1 million because the teacher's retirement system sent out annual statements that indicated his wife had named no beneficiary. That would make him the closest relative, therefore the beneficiary. But after she died, officials found a form which had been filled out 27 years ago, a few years before they got married, or a year before they got married, on a blind date. It indicated Annie's mother, uncle, and sister should collect the money. Annie's mother and uncle had died, so the money was awarded to the sister, Virginia. And Friedman complained, she won't give me a cent. So this went all the way to the Supreme Court in New York and was upheld by the appellate division in December of that following year. And the bottom line is, it says in this article, make sure you update your pension beneficiary forms. If you don't, If you don't, your spouse and your family may wind up with nothing, Friedman says. So if that doesn't tell the tale, I don't know what does. Let's take another break. When we come back, a lot of things happening in Washington that could affect retirement accounts. I want to get into that, and then we'll wrap up the big show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. So, you know, if you listen to this radio station, not just during my show, but you'll hear lots of commercials. And I have been running the same commercial for like a year. And it talked about the national debt and how we've been putting away tax-deferred dollars, hoping to be in a lower tax bracket when we retire, and how that narrative has been flipped. And with over $30 trillion in debt and debt growing, taxes are likely to be higher. So pay the tax now. Do not defer it into the future. Well, I recorded this new commercial, and it's kind of in the same realm, but I just updated things. We're now over $30 trillion in debt, not nearing 30, and looking to pass this other budget with over a $1 trillion deficit. And for the next 10 years, we'll continue to pass $1 trillion deficit budgets. So what are the chances taxes are going to be lower in the future? Not good. Again, as Americans, we have been putting the money away in tax-deferred 401ks and IRAs, meaning we received a deduction for it when it went in. It grew tax-deferred, and then we pay tax when it comes out. Do we really think we'll be in a lower tax bracket when we retire, really? So again, the story's been flipped. We need to pay the tax now, not defer in the future. So I would rather put it in as a Roth. Pay it now at your 12, 22, 24, whatever tax bracket you are. It doesn't matter. Pay the tax now. Then it grows all tax deferred and comes out tax free. It's like you're paying tax on the seed, not the harvest. Who would not want that? But we've been doing the opposite for all these years. We've gotten this tax deduction for the seed that went in the ground. We've watched this enormity of this account grow. And now we're like, oh my gosh, now I have to pay tax? Yes. And by the way, you're at the lowest tax bracket, tax rates ever since taxes were introduced back in 1907, 1913, in that era. So here is something that has come up. We are now looking, you know, required distributions. So my talk is, listen, you're putting this money away, and not only can the IRS at some point say how much of it is theirs, we know what it is today, we don't know what it will be in the future, but when you have to take it out. So when do you have to take it out, and how much of it is yours? Right now we know that you can be 72 before they're requiring distributions to come out. There's been some movement on the Hill that's pushing that back to 75. It's not happened yet, but there is some movement to do that. Now, I'm thinking, why would that be something they would want to pass? Well, I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that. I'm just more of a realist, because most people need their money. They're not even caring what their RMD is, but they need it anyway. So whatever they take out exceeds the required minimum distribution, because the first year, it's only like 3.6% of your account value. Well, most people who need their money are taking out more than that. And these are smaller retirement accounts. It's the largest retirement accounts that are getting delayed, and they don't usually need the money. Here's a great example, and maybe you wish you were him. I have a client. He's single, 72 this year. He has about $3 million in retirement accounts. He has a pension from his former employer of about $80,000. Social Security, he waited until 70, of $45,000. He'll occasionally take a few bucks out of his accounts here and there. 20 here, 20 there, when Florida is calling. I calculated his RMD this week because he was coming in, and it was $109,000. Now, he's single, so he's getting slammed, and nothing he can do about it. His Medicare premiums are the highest they can possibly be, right? So we're like, what should we do? Should we just tear the Band-Aid off and just do a massive Roth conversion? And I said, well, we would need to convert $2 million bucks for it to make sense at all. But he can't stomach the idea, and nor can I, really, of sending $860,000. So if we converted $2 million, $860,000, that's federal and state, would be sent off in taxes, leaving him with, you know, 1, 2, 4. And I don't know how you feel, but if I had $2 million, and in a blink of an eye, it was now 1, 2, I don't think I'd like that very well. So, you know, he's single, and we said, you know what, we're not going to do that. We're just going to do modest Roth conversions just so that at the end of the day, when you pass away, your kids can have some tax-free money, and they'll deal with the taxable later, because there's nothing we can really do about it. I loved his what he said to me. He said, I cannot see sending $860,000 to the IRS and watch it be spent in such an irrational and stupid way. And I reminded him that 70% of our spending is non-discretionary. It's being spent on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the interest on our debt. It's projected now to be, what, I gave you the numbers earlier, 118% higher Medicare, 79% higher for Social Security, and interest costs over 213% higher. That's not going to get any better. So there has to be some major concessions made down the road. The longer we wait, the worse the problem will be. The longer we wait, the easier it is for us to pull our window shade down and pretend like nothing's happening. For the majority of you out there, if you're still working, please, I beg you, do not put any more money away tax deferred. The money they match you will go tax deferred. And then do an aggressive Roth conversion strategy that makes sense for you and your family. In this case, single didn't make a lot of sense. I met someone this morning. It didn't make a lot of sense for her. I think what we should do, she's single as well. Let's start working on paying down some debts, getting ready for retirement. Let's not worry about the Roth conversion. So as much as I preach and I pound, you've got to get out of the crosshairs of this mathematical certainty in which is higher taxes coming. Sometimes in an individual situation, it doesn't make as much sense. And this was one of them. All right, let's take a break. Come back, wrap up the show. Yep, it's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. If you didn't get to hear the show in its entirety, of course, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., it will kick off bright and early for you to listen to it, or go over to WGCLradio.com. And of course, go to your favorite place to get your podcast. Of course, mine is iTunes, and you can download the most recent episode of Your Money with David Hayes, and, get the podcast 2025, Taxes and Retirement, What You Need to Know to Win. And we are now up to podcast number 12, which will be out on Monday evening. But do yourself a favor, start with number one and go all the way through. A nice trip to Chicago, Indianapolis, and back. You could probably knock them all out. And people that I've been talking to lately who have binge-listened the podcast have really enjoyed it. And I'm hoping that it's being informative and inspirational, right, to make sure that you understand your options, your choices, and how those affect you and your family long term. So we had a good one last week on how to handle company stock inside your 401k the most tax-correct way. And then this week, we discussed the most sacred tax code of all, IRS Section 7702, which discusses the tax-free treatment of life insurance. And I go into a bunch of detail on when you need it while you're working with a young family, when you need it in retirement, how it can be used in a variety of different ways, including long-term care, including retirement income, including trying to create a tax-free estate. I think you'll enjoy it. It's the longest one I've done in a long time, but I think you'll get the point. Hey, I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend, and I'll be back here hot in the studio next Thursday on Your Money with David Hayes. Have a good one, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.